This episode of Own the Gray is brought to you by I Am. Discover your unique talents, realize your potential, and align to your path. Take the first step to uncover your life purpose by visiting deborahjones.ca/courses. AI, or artificial intelligence, may seem like a far-off concept that has nothing to do with you. But the truth is, you are already using it. From Netflix movie recommendations, Siri and Alexa, Face ID on your phone or computer, how about ride-hailing apps like Uber, to the search algorithm on Google. And robots are already in our homes too, with the Roomba, and now robots that clean your windows, your barbecue, even your pool. And now Lego sells robot kits that teach children coding and problem solving. Hollywood movies depict AI as a villainous technology that is destined to take over the world. Are they right? Find out more on this next episode and then decide for yourself. Welcome to Own the Gray, a podcast to dispel the notion that aging is undesirable and setting new, positive attitudes. I'm Deborah Jones, and I believe you can be vibrant and healthy throughout the best years of your life. Dr. Rick Cromie is an expert in generational theory. He's a developmental psychologist with a doctorate in cultural exploration. He has authored more than a dozen books, including his recent bestseller, GenTech, An American Story of Technology, Change, and Who We Really Are. I invited him on to Own the Gray to share his insight into how technology has changed since the baby boomers were born and what we can expect to see in the future. In his words, buckle up, buttercup, it's gonna get wild out there. Here's my enlightening conversation with Dr. Rick Cromie. So you are a cultural explorer, and I see you also have a doctorate in cultural exploration. So you obviously went into it in great detail, and that you're an expert in generational theory. So do you want to let us know what that has given you as far as insight into the world?
Well, first of all, Deborah, thank you for the opportunity to be on your show and to share with your listeners about this very important topic of generations. I'm a cultural historian. Actually, I'm also an explorer of our culture, but more than anything, I'm a historian of it. Several years ago now, about 15, I started really putting technology and generational analysis together because I thought a lot of the names that we have, you know, the names and frames, the labels, baby boomers. I mean, where'd we get that name? And it was actually a book in 1980 that created this name, Landry Jones, and he just kind of put it on his generation. And he created the label even, or the frame, from 1946 to 1964, and it kind of stuck. Same thing with Gen X. It was a book in 1991 that had that as a title for a generation of kids, and it stuck. Like napalm, it stuck. And it's a terrible name. It really means nothing. And, you know, millennials and even the newer one, you know, Gen Z. I mean, what does Gen Z actually mean? You know, and that was created by a marketing firm out of, I think, New Zealand, if I remember my history on that one properly. And it was, they were still in diapers when that one got stuck on them. And it's all about the money, Deborah. That's kind of where it comes from. But I just want to have a different conversation about it. I think that generations are framed more by the technology that we come of age to. And that is about every 10 years, a new technology tends to pop. And it is it's a technology that changes how we communicate, how we relate to one another, how we get information. And it's really, really interesting. In my book, GenTech, An American Story of Technology, Change, and Who We Really Are, I go back to 1900 because here in America, that that's kind of an interesting year. But since 1900, there's been more technological change than there has been in the entire history of the world. So I start in 1900, and about every 10 years, and I was just amazed about every 10 years, there was this new technology that was popping. And the reason it's interesting to me is because I'm also a developmental psychologist. I study humans and relationships and how we develop and all that. And when I was teaching developmental psychology, I commonly talked about how we come of age, you know, might call it the puberty years, technically, between the ages of 10 and 25. We start, you know, and this includes everything from biological to emotional development, spiritual development, all the different ways we can develop as human beings happened between the ages of 10 and 25. And that's where it was interesting to me when I started putting those two together. When a generation is coming of age, there's also a technology that is popping. So, you know, from the very beginning, you had transportation and telephone as technologies that, you know, the car, the motorbike, the airplane, those were technologies that were popping, and the telephone changed how we communicate, motion pictures, and then radio. And then 10 years later, you had vinyl records popping. And then 10 years later, you had television popping. And then 10 years, you had the whole space technology, everything going on with space exploration popping. Then 10 years later, we had the gaming generation popping. And then the cable television and such. And so, and then you get into the 80s, you have cell phones and personal computers. And then the 90s, it was internet. And then, you know, in the 2000s, I don't call them Gen Z, by the way, or Gen Z. I call them the iTech generation, because those born since 2000, they've been born with iTechnologies. They've cut their teeth on iTechnologies of the iTunes and iPods and iPads and iPhones and iWatches. You know, that's where they are. And the social media that became a part of those contexts is so fascinating to me. And, you know, even the newest generation born since 2010, I call the robo generation or robotics generation. And that's what my book's all about, right there in a nutshell. So where do you want to go, Deborah? Where do you want to explore?
Where do I want to go? Well, first I want to ask, so if technology changes every 10 years, we are in the phase of the robo generation. What is that?
Well, and by change, I just mean that there's something that's popping. It's adding to the context. I mean, telephones didn't go away, obviously. There's been a change in how we use the telephone. You know, it went from being a stick, literally a stick that was there. They call it the stick telephone with a receiver on it to touch tone or to rotary dial, and then the touch tone, and then eventually to cell phones or flip phones, and then obviously the smartphone. So there's an evolution to it. As far as the newest generation, the robotics generation, I like acronyms because acronyms help me to remember things, and I like to make things mind easy for my audiences. And so when I look at the robotics generation, and in the book, I talk about hair, and maybe it's because I'm bald, but, you know, I think there's going to be hair technology. There's definite hair technologies that are going to frame, and they're already framing those born, these kids, these children born since 2010. And HAIR stands for three technologies. H is holographic. AI is artificial intelligence, and R is robotics. And those three technologies, and really they're melding together. That's what's fascinating to me. They're melding together where, you know, in 10 years, it's really by 2030, I always say, you think we changed a lot since 1900? We've also changed a lot since the year 2000. And there'll be more technological change in the next, you know, decade than there has been in the entire 21st century to start with. So buckle up, Buttercup. It's going to get wild out here.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about, because I've been doing a little bit of research on it myself, and the, you know, the artificial intelligence and how that is going to be shifting, and that the fact that by 2022 we might have a whole new world, and that's really only like next year. So there's things that are going on that affect us. And when I talk to my parents and they're having a tough time with the technology as it is there anything that you could share with us that will allow us to maybe adopt it in a positive fashion instead of maybe a little resistance that I'm sensing is out there?
Yeah, and let's be honest, the older we get, the more we resist change. I think because change becomes much harder for us as we age, and that's only natural. My mother, who I dearly love, she went to her grave never owning a cell phone. She also never was on Facebook until the very end. I managed to get her on Facebook at the very end of her life. But my father, who's still alive, he has one of those old flip style cell phones, and he's just happy as a lark with that particular phone. The only problem is that it's going away. My mother-in-law, she's got one of these old flip phones, and she's just happy with it. She doesn't need the smartphone. The problem is that her phone is going to be going away in the next year. You won't be able to buy a flip phone anymore. I mean, it's moving totally towards smartphone technology. And, you know, what I tell my parents and my mother-in-law is that you've got to adapt and get somebody around you. Obviously, your children, your grandchildren can help you manipulate some of that. But what's nice about a lot of the new smartphone technology is it's more intuitive in nature. And that means it's more natural. You know, it's easy. Oh, okay. It just makes sense to do it that way. A lot of technology in its, as we call it, beta technology, as it's coming out, tends to be counterintuitive. And that's what frustrates us, is counterintuitive technology. But once technology becomes intuitive and we think on the same page, is basically what I mean by that. So when I want my technology to operate, I know exactly what to do. It's why for years we yelled at our VCRs because of the light that was blinking. We didn't know how to change the freaking clock, you know, and that eventually VCRs began to intuitively change the clock for themselves. They didn't need to have us change it anymore. And then we went, oh, okay, the light no longer blinks and I'm happy. And I think that's how technology rolls. So as far as a tip, I would say get people around you that love you and accept you for who you are. And you know, you know, technology doesn't always work for me. I'm 58 years old and it doesn't always work for me. But I have my son often will come over and he'll help me through the questions I have. And there we go.
Cool. So with the exploration that you've done about the different generations and how humans have evolved, I guess, are you seeing a trajectory? And is there anything that you can share of what you see of how we are evolving?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And I believe in social evolution. Myself and how we adapt to you know, the idea of microevolution, how we adapt in various ways to our environments and such. You know, there's still a lot of questions as far as the big scale type of evolutionary leaps that are there, and I will leave that to the scientists out there to navigate that one. But you know, let's just take robotics for a moment, because you know, one of the big fears about robots coming down the pike, and that's the R in hair technology again, is that the robots will eventually, and they call it the great assimilation, they'll literally become human, and they will be able to then you know, reproduce, and they'll be able to eventually take over humanity as we know it. It's the nightmare of every science fiction movie out there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but here's the problem is, I don't think, no matter how smart robots become, and we do know that they can eventually will be able to reproduce. I was just reading this yesterday, Deborah. Something coming out right now. It's in beta testing, but it's robots that can reproduce, and they're very, very small robots. But they are robots they intend to use inside the human body to eat and devour cancer cells. So that's fascinating. Excuse me. That's fascinating technology to me, because we may be able to eradicate cancer in the next 50 years through robotic technology that literally consumes the cancer cells from within. And they're able to reproduce naturally within the body and then consume. And then I guess exit the body when they're no longer needed. So invasive surgeries of the future will be pretty much done. We will inject little tiny bots into our bloodstreams and into we'll swallow them into our digestive systems to root out things. I mean, but here's the thing about robots. No matter how smart they become, and even if they can reproduce, they will never be able to emote. We learned that on Star Trek, I believe, right? Remember Data, you know, both Spock and Data, you know, Data was a robot. He was humanoid. From Star Trek: The Next Generation, he always wanted to emote. He wanted that emotive chip. And when they put it in him, it never worked. He could never emote, And I think that's going to be what keeps us human and what keeps us somewhat more, you know, well, that's what's going to keep us human in the future, is our ability to emote and to create. I don't think you're going to see robots creating. They can duplicate, they can mm-hmm. reproduce, but can they actually innovate and create? That's a different story. And again, it's a question for the ages. And
mm-hmm. I know we're just getting your opinions based on yeah. all the research that you've done.
Yeah.
But in what I was looking at is that right now, artificial intelligence is artificial narrow intelligence, which is task oriented. So we get the artificial intelligence to create a task, right?
Right.
And then it's moving, or already has, I don't know, to artificial general intelligence, which is as intellectually capable as a human.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that makes me a little nervous, and you've touched on it already, is the ASI, the artificial superintelligence, which is supposed to be way smarter than human. So smart is one thing. Being able to emote and be human is another thing. And so my question really is, with all of the technology, and I see, as you were saying, the benefits of in the medical field, for instance, and the things that we could never do, maybe we can, to create a healthy body. We are still humans and we're still living in this world and there's still a need for us. Have you got any thoughts on if robots will take over the world?
Yeah, again, I don't think they will take over. I think probably within the next 10 years, robots will be as common to us today as television screens are. You know, they'll be everywhere. You'll see robots as tour guides. You'll see robots reporting. You'll see robots, firefighters and police officers, any of those type of jobs that require danger, a robot can do it. They're already testing robots in Los Angeles as police officers. They just go around and they keep things on patrol, and they can even make arrests. They have the ability to make arrests. They will detain a person until the actual human police officers come and then take them into physical custody. But a robot will actually stop them and detain them. I'm not sure how that happens, but it'd be interesting to watch that sometimes. That's a whole thing right there.
It is, isn't it? Well, it brings to mind the TV show The Jetsons, which I grew up on, and totally loved it, right? And we had, was it Rosie? Mm. Rosie was the robot that cooked and cleaned and dressed you.
Yeah, very good.
You know, if we can, you know, utilize the technology to make our lives easier, giving us maybe more time to do the things that we really want to do. I think I see that as a plus.
Yeah. Yeah. My biggest concern with robots right now is that in Japan, we have to look at the difference between Western robots and Eastern robots. In the West, we've looked at them more utilitarian. They've done jobs for us, and they will continue to do jobs for us. You know, they mow our lawns or vacuum our floors, and they get people out of tight pinches, and robots can do those type of things. But in the East, it's a little bit different. In Japan, for example, they're creating humanoid robots. And these are robots that when you touch them, they feel human. They even have a warmth of a human body. They have the artificial intelligence to learn. You know, before, robots were whatever you put into the algorithm. Putting in algorithms, and then they perform to the algorithms. But learning machines, artificial intelligence combining with robotics is going to create humanoids. And it's already, something, when you think of certain industries out there, it could be very positive, obviously, to have more humanoid robots. But on the other hand, you know, for example, the pornography industry has already looked at these type of robots as, you know, a way to sexually satisfy a person. And that's where my concerns start to come in, is when we start replacing human relationships with artificial relationships, because, you know, a human just is a different, you know, that there's an intimacy with a human that you cannot get. And we've been kind of grooving that way anyway. I think when you look at relationship, especially during COVID, we've had to separate and isolate and all that. And so when you think about pets, a lot of people, you know, their pets are literally their best friends. You know, and there's nothing wrong with having a pet as your best friend, but you know, it is when you make that pet even more important than human relationships in your life, and that pet becomes on a level higher than you know. There are people out there that would like to marry their pets, and those are all sorts of different ethical questions. And with robots, that's kind of what's coming. And when I was doing study for the book, I believe it's either Iran or Iraq, one of those two Middle Eastern countries have actually granted citizenship to a robot. And that's where we get into interesting conversations, Deborah, is will they become so human that we will treat them as human? And I think that's an ethical question that we haven't really talked about.
Wow. Yeah. You were talking about relationships. I just happened to watch the TV series Black Mirror. I don't know if you're aware of it. And I think it's the first one. And it was literally about plugging into the virtual world and having a relationship. And it kind of freaked me out, actually, because I can see that, you know, maybe it's already happening. I don't know. But I can see the attractiveness of something like that, as you said, especially when we're isolated and you know, we're not making friends and we're afraid to go out, some of us. So, you know, the idea of the robot world and how it's affecting us. But I think what I get as a message from the information that I've learned from your website and your information is that we have no choice but to adjust to new technology, because it doesn't go away, does it?
No. In fact, a lot of the concerns that we have about, you know, robots and how creepy it is, and you know, our struggles with some of the newer technologies that are emerging right now, holographic. You know, we haven't even talked about holograms, holographic technology. In the future, you'll be able to go to concerts. Can you imagine going to see the Beatles in 1964? Well, guess what? You will be able to do that. You'll be able to go to a concert with the Beatles in 1964, and they will look as real on stage to you as they did in 1964, but they'll be holograms. The band ABBA is doing that right now, creating a holographic tour. And, you know, they're not going to travel around. And that's where a lot of rock stars, is where about bands are going. They won't need to go on tour in the future. They'll do one concert and on one night, and they'll go to multiple venues all over the world. You'll gather in those venues and you'll get to hear the band live, but they'll be in London and you'll be in LA, and you'll think that they're actually on stage with you in LA. Holographic technology. It's huge. This is the fascinating thing about being a historian, is that we've been here before. We've had these conversations before. The telephone, when it was first introduced into culture, many people thought it was demonic. You know, the idea of being able to talk to someone who was far away through a wire. I mean, that was weird. It was creepy. And a lot of the same words were used. And then the same thing was said about the radio and then the television. In 1961, in the United States government basically looked at television and said it was a vast, barren wasteland as far as entertainment goes. I mean, this is 1960. Can you imagine what they'd say today? You know, it's just unbelievable. But all the way along, we were afraid. Remember when the internet first was young? Some of us remember that. You know, back own the gray here a little bit. Back when the internet was young, you know, there was this fear that it was going to separate us all and make us, you know, we'll sit around in our pajamas and in basements and not have a life. And in some cases, that's true. But
it's true.
But on the other end, think about what social media has done. Social media has brought us together. That's why I don't like the word social distancing. I think social distancing is not a great idea, because we haven't socially distanced. We physically distanced, but we've not socially distanced. We've stayed in contact with people through our social media.
Yeah, it's true. When you were talking about the holograms, I remember, and it was quite a few years ago, the first time that I noticed that, it was a concert by Natalie Cole and her father, Nat King Cole, which was like the first, like, wow, that's really incredible. I'm sure it's come a long way since then. But
yeah, that was two-dimensional holograms, but we're talking about three-dimensional holograms. We're probably only 5 years away from seeing 3D holographic technology on our smartphones. So now when you look at your smartphone and you have a video conversation like they did in the Jetsons, that's one thing. But imagine the future when out of that cell phone can pop a 3D image of that person talking to you. That's holographic. And we're probably 5 years away from seeing that. So
wow. I'm looking forward to that, actually. And that will maybe even make us feel a little closer to those people that we can't be physically close to.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So there's
a
lot.
I keep telling my 85-year-old mom, mother-in-law, she has to get a smartphone, you know, during the 21st century.
So, Rick, is there any particular message that you want us to know?
I keep going back to just being real, being authentic, being human. That's what separates us from animals. It's what separates us from robots, is that authenticity. And by being human, you know, we can do human, but to be human is something different. We are human beings, not human doings. And I think it's too easy in our culture to get wrapped up in the doing aspect of being human, when to be human means that we accept who we are, we embrace the failures as well as the glorious successes. We have stories on our bodies called scars, and those scars basically tell the story of our life, the hurts as well as the healings that we've had. That's what a scar is. A scar is nothing more than a healed story. Be human. And that's what's going to keep us separate. It's what's going to keep us distinct. And it's going to keep us unique in this new fake and artificial plastic world that's coming around us so quickly.
That is really a very key point, because, you know, we're creating the robots to do things mm-hmm. so that we can be.
Well, that would be the hope, right?
know, Oh, we have to learn it.
I love the fact that my robot vacuum cleaner vacuums the floors every week, and it does a wonderful job. Now, my 84-year-old mother-in-law, she goes out there and she doesn't like the pattern. She doesn't like how that thing goes through the house. I'm going, leave it alone. You know, we have conversations. We have actual fights over the robot vacuum cleaner.
But, yeah, my parents do too all the time.
They think it's silly. I said, well, it's memorizing.
I also think it's a way for us to try to feel like we're still in control, don't you think?
Bingo. Bingo. That is a deep human need we all have. The need for ownership, the need to be validated. We want to be validated as human beings. We want to have a voice, and we want to be in control. The problem is that when we take it to excess, I mean, anything is good until it's taken to excess. And when control is taken to excess, that's when it becomes toxic. And we become toxic people because we're control freaks and we want to control everything and everyone. And that's not good either.
So there's a fine line. There's a balance, right? Mm-hmm. We need to find the balance between all of this, and also to find the peace in it, rather than look at the negative sides or the downsides. Is what are the positive sides? And I think we'll feel better about ourselves when we can look in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I deal a lot with media, and, you know, you were talking about supercomputers and knowledge and information. You know, we've been basically outmatched by Siri and Alexa and Google and everything like that when it comes to information for 20 years now. As a college professor, I told my students in the 2000s, I'm done teaching you content. I need to teach you how to critically think now, because I can't. You can literally learn more in a 30-minute Google search than I can teach you in 4 years here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to censor information that I don't think you need to know, and maybe you think you need to know it. And that's the problem today. You know, when you look at people and you look at our divisiveness, a lot of us have retreated into echo chambers that's flavored and really funneled by our favored media that we consume. Anybody that counters that, this is where we get into arguments and all sorts of oppositional you know, issues and stuff. But they come from the fact we feel comfortable, we feel secure inside those echo chambers. And I think the older we get, the more we go, okay, I just want to stay with people of my own type. You know, I don't want to have too much change here. I don't want to argue. I don't want to fight. And I know my for my boomer friends, they're constantly struggling with the younger generation making fun of them, you know, the okay boomer thing that went around here recently. But then I remind my boomer friends, yeah, but you were making fun of millennials for a long time, you know, calling them snowflakes and other things. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, if I may, I think it's important for us to understand how we communicate with other generations. if you're someone who's younger listening to this, you know, you need to learn how to communicate with older generations. And I imagine most of this audience is going to be more older in context. You know, we need to understand how to effectively and positively communicate with younger generations. And one of the ways to do that is I call it talking tech, Deborah. And that means understanding the four different ways that we need to communicate in any given situation. The T stands for translate. Sometimes we just need to translate. We need to, you know, explain something a little bit, you know, help them go, oh, this is what you think it is, but let me show you what it really is. You know, we just need to translate it better. The E is elaborate. Sometimes we need to go into deeper detail and do more of a historical understanding and gain more of an elaboration and more deeper explanation. The C is collaborate. Sometimes our issue is not that we don't understand it. Our issue is that, you know, we need to actually work together to create a better answer here. So let's collaborate. Let's figure out ways that we can work together and solve this. You know, for example, with tech, trying to understand the new technology, I want to collaborate with someone of the younger generation. And then the last one is just habituate. Sometimes what we need to do is there are certain things that are non-negotiable. Maybe it might be a policy, for example, if you're running a company, but even in the homes, we just have non-negotiables. This is who we are, in other words, Deborah. And what we need to do then is habituate. And habituate means to create a habit. We need to habituate a person to who we are. You're not going to change me on this one. You know, this is what I believe. It's non-negotiable. I love you, but you know, if you're in my house, this is who we are. So sometimes we translate, sometimes we elaborate, sometimes we collaborate, and sometimes we habituate. Knowing which one to do at which point is key to having productive and positive conversations with someone of a different generation.
I can't top that.
Well, hopefully it's helpful. You know, that's what I want to do on anything is I just want to be helpful. You know, a lot of people like you, Deborah, have said, you know, boy, wow, look at where this world's going. I understand Gen Tech. It sure makes more sense to look at generations through technology. And if you're interested in that, by all means, you know, get the book and learn more about it because I can only give you a superficial skim of it right now. But, you know, the bottom line for me is how do we create better community? How do we create better relationships? How do we build a family of humans out here that respect each other? And that's the bottom line. You know, whenever I teach this tech conversation piece, I always say it starts with the R of respect. We have got to learn to respect people again. And there's a lot of disrespect between generations today. And because of disrespect, there becomes a distrust. And when you have disrespect and distrust, you have all sorts of dysfunctions that result.
Yeah, totally. So the idea is to be human together, learn from each other, and grow with each other.
Excellent. You ought to do a podcast. That's great.
So if you'd like to learn more about Dr. Rick Cromie's book, it's called Gen Tech, An American Story of Technology, Change, and Who We Really Are. And I will put a link to that in the show notes and also a link to your website, Rick, which is rickcromie.com.
Right. And if you order the book through me, you can go through Amazon and some of those other booksellers out there, obviously. If you order the book through me, I can give you an autograph and other things like that, but I throw the shipping in and it's about the same price and all that. I always tell people, you know, the book is free if you order through me and the autograph is $20. But, you know, whatever works for you, Amazon's fine too. You want to create a new conversation here about how we look at generations and history and culture.
Yeah. And to empower us to rethink and reimagine our ideas.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's perfect. Exactly.
Appreciate you listening. Thanks so much. Please go to speakpipe.com/Deborah Jones to share what you thought about this episode and what you'd like to hear next on Own the Gray. This episode brought to you by Lunch with a Healer podcast. The best conversations happen when you're having lunch with a friend, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair at lunchwithahealer.com.